Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. Hope you had a lovely Thanksgiving.
Oh, I had a lovely Thanksgiving. I smoked turkey.
I know.
Yeah, there's some things. Not a big smoked turkey fan.
I know. Some stuff you shouldn't smoke.
Yeah, some things don't.
Turkey.
You don't smoke your turkey.
I know. It was just weird.
You smoke your socks, but not your turkey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of things. I don't know. I don't smoke anything, but yeah.
It's pretty bad.
You know it's bad when I don't want to take leftovers home.
I know. Because you're
like
a turkey person.
Oh, I'll pass.
I love turkey.
Thanks so much. No,
what happened to the turkey? It's burned.
I know. Wow. Sorry, got us derailed there.
Yeah, we can stop anytime.
What are the odds of that?
Tapping on the turkey.
Oh, my goodness. So we've been doing this show for like 8 years. We've got tons of archives on lots of topics. And before I forget, we talked about China. Had some scary information about China. Not just the, you know, communism and the spying, but then there was the forced organ donation if you happen to be snapped up as a political prisoner or some other kind of prisoner. And you just kind of get put in there and they type you, and gosh, if you have a liver somebody else wants to pay for, bonus, it can be ready for you in 2 weeks.
So if you're going to go to China and be a criminal, be in very poor health.
Exactly.
you might survive.
That's when you might want to smoke your turkey. and pretty much everything else you can get your hands on. So
what's this guy been eating?
Turkey. We're going to have part two on that discussion, as if there was more to talk about. I had people say, that is too scary. I'm like, well, just another service we provide. But that'll be next week. So we have June back again, and she has somebody different joining us.
Oh.
Other than her reporter friends.
This so I did not know.
Stay tuned. That'll be next week. And in the meantime, you can find everything about us at wethepeopleradio.us. And my name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And our sponsor is
Team Power. Team Power. That we can count on Team Power. They're awesome. They just say, hey, you need a sponsor, go for it. So they're our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. Boy, I got a big echo. I don't know what's going on there. But yeah, they're
is it just between your ears, or is it other places that other people can hear?
I think it's everywhere. Everywhere. So Team Power, John Deere Kubota tractor dealer, full service dealer, part sales service. They can do it all up there. New, used, go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller. And you can get them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Ta-da!
Ta-da, there you go.
So, now that we've done all that fun stuff, which was something else I was going to remind people about, but I forget what that was. Hard to do the reminder if I forget what the reminder is. But anyway, today, we have really kind of a wide-ranging topic, so we're going to just follow along with our guest, Peter Friedman, and he's been on with us a bunch of times. I know we just replayed one of his shows, his time with the FBI, one of my favorites. So if you haven't heard the one about the FBI, you really should go back and listen to that one. We've replayed that a couple of times. It's a gut buster, actually. It was really funny.
Funny stuff.
So we called today Democrats, immigration, gun control, and not to be outdone, Democratic socialists working against the USA.
I heard there's a couple of socialists in the Democratic Party. Is that correct?
Yeah. Ashley's got a red shirt on today. Are you working for the opposition?
Are you with them, comrade?
it's gotten ugly. So Mr. Friedman and I were trading emails back and forth. I'm like, yeah, you should come on. We should talk about that. So, we're going to talk about that.
We're going to talk about it.
And we're probably going to make fun of the new climate change.
I was so disappointed to hear that.
Whatever the heck
that
was.
Oh, my gosh.
They were trying to tell me about it last night in the news. I turned it off. But I did find a fun song about it, so I guess we'll just mock them. In the absence of actual information,
it's what we do.
We'll just default to mocking.
It's free of charge. We'll mock you.
So, let's see. Mr. Friedman, he's got a wide skill set. If you've never heard him before, he's a fun guy. He's been studying and lecturing on the threat of Islam in America for 40 years. That's typically what we talk about. Then we branched out, talked about the FBI and all that. He maintains a thorough collection of Qurans in English translations, beginning with George Sale's translation in 1734. So his shows on that are awesome. You should definitely go back and listen to those. And Let's see. His background is replete with relationships to the Middle East, especially what was Palestine prior to the formation of the State of Israel in 1948. And I wanted to fast forward into his firearms resume, which I did list online, along with his contact information, because he's got a long list. I'm not going to do it all, but he's an NRA certified law enforcement instructor, handguns and tactical and defensive pistol instructor and Glock certified. And bottom line is, if it has bullets, he knows how it works and he can probably do that remotely. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
He can point it at you.
Exactly. He was a U.S. Navy small arms instructor and a reserve deputy sheriff and a reserve deputy sheriff pilot. And he's in Oath Keepers and Sheriff's Posse in Contra Costa County and a community emergency response team. I never get to that part because it's at the bottom. I thought I'd start at the bottom and work my way up. And FAA, tons of what? Okay, Peter, are you in there?
Oh, I'm here. Keep going. I love it.
Yeah, and the FAA.
I'm sorry, Peter. I should have told her, Aaron, don't read the book.
No, you're taking up valuable time.
Read the book. That's what he always tells us about Islam. That whole show is covered with read the book. whenever we think of you, we think of read the book.
Read the book.
Read the book.
So, Where do you want to start today? We've got, I had a terrible time picking out music because I thought, well, I don't know where we're going.
Okay, well, let's set a couple of ground rules.
Oh, no. So bad
with
rules.
First of all, let's start, when I do this live for groups of people, you know, there are certain basic rules of nature and science that you have to accept, one of which is gravity. So what I do is, you know, I bring an apple in there and I throw it up in the air and I let it come down and I catch it. And I do that two or three times. And then I kind of ask everybody out there in the audience, what do you suppose I'm trying to demonstrate? And there's always somebody up there who's, you know, hasn't been through the public school system, but went to private school and says, well, you know, that's gravity.
Apples don't fly.
And Sir Isaac Newton, you know, proved that. I said, so it always works, right? Yeah, so we can count on it, right? Right. And we talk a little about the sun and how the sun theoretically rises, you know, in the east, sets in the west. And then we get into a little bit about how the earth actually revolves around the sun. But then the Catholic Church and the Vatican maintained that, you know, everything revolved around the earth. Well, they were wrong. And the moon, the Greeks took a look at the new moon, and they saw that there was a circular shadow on it. And the Greeks sat there going, let's see, if the sun is passing past the earth and the earth's reflection is on the moon, the earth must be round. So, you know, this is all stuff here that are absolutely scientific facts. Now, you mentioned Islam. One of the interesting things in Islam is that there are no natural facts. Because if you read the book, what the book tells you is that Allah can change anything anytime he wants. So it's interesting that when you hear about all of the earthquakes and stuff in Iran and wherever, in Middle East countries, you know, that there's no building code. There's no building code. That's why they all fall down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because they deny the existence of natural laws. Okay, so when you start with that idea, what I want to do is I want to get into some facts. And some of these facts are extremely controversial. And I would encourage anybody listening to do your own research. Please do not take my word for it. I will give you the sources. I will tell you exactly where to get this information. It's exactly where I got the information. And you will discover that this is factual information, and we have been propagandized now for at least two generations. You know, Dr. Goebbels is alive and well. So let's start out with Democrats.
Okay, hold on. Hold on before we go there. We've got to start
now,
out.
Now we have the groundwork. We're going to go Democrats.
We have to start out with capitalism. We have to have a little celebrate capitalism break here. And a little song about, I guess, my thoughts on the global warming thing. And then we'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Man, it's hot in here.
Seriously, dude.
There's a crisis on the planet. It's heated up almost a whole degree. It hasn't been this hot in a long time. Not since the 16th century, when there were no evil SUVs. Stop global warming. It's up to you. The Earth's been heating up and cooling back down since the day it started spinning round and round. Stop global warming. Get your head out of the clouds.
Russia's? Yeah. It's too quiet in here. I can't hear myself talk.
All right, Peter. Now we can talk about the Democrats.
Okay. So, controversial statement number one. The Democrat Party took their first hard turn to the left in the modern era in 1972 with George McGovern. And if you go and you Google George McGovern, for example, in Cuba, and this is when he decided he was going to run against Richard Nixon, who was a vehement anti-communist, you'll find George McGovern down in Havana riding around in a Jeep all over Cuba with Fidel Castro, Che Guevara, very friendly with these people. And there was a whole cadre of the Democrat Party that at that point wound up going that direction. And that is today, these are the kids of those people who went that direction back in the 70s. And I lived through this. I was, you know, I just turned 74, so I've been around a while. The modern Democrat Party, okay, aside from the fact that it started with Andrew Jackson back in the 1800s, actually started in the modern era here in the 20th century with Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson, who was the president of Princeton College, who was extremely naive and corrupt, wound up being corrupted by people like J.P. Morgan and the investment banking community, and they said that they would support him for president in 1914, provided that he allowed the formation of the Federal Reserve. And if you take a look at Karl Marx's manifesto, the Communist Manifesto of 1848, one of the basic tenets in the Communist Manifesto is the formation of a national banking system, where the government can control the monetary supply. So that's what the Federal Reserve is. There is nothing whatsoever backing our money. If you take a look at any paper money in your pocket right now, in the front of it, the top corner above the portrait, you'll see it says Federal Reserve note. All these are IOUs. At this point, we have no idea whether there's any gold left in Fort Knox. Okay? I mean, it's that simple. So we go back to Woodrow Wilson, and this is what occurred. And under Woodrow Wilson, we also got the income tax put in. And then you kind of fast forward, and I'm trying to, you know, just hit some high spots here. Otherwise, we can be here all day, which would be great. But if you take a look at the Democrat Party that emanated in the South, go back to the Constitution, 1787, the Constitutional Convention. If you read Madison's notes, the only way that the South, the Southern states, would go along with ratifying the Constitution is once again the slavery issue, which none of we teach any of this stuff in school anymore, okay? Because it would get people educated, they would begin to think for themselves, and then they couldn't be controlled. Anybody who thinks for themselves and comes to their own conclusion based on, again, facts, read gravity, will come to the conclusions that I am going to sit here and talk to you about today. So when you realize that the Democratic base emanated from the Southern slave states and the plantations, they went through this kind of a metamorphosis, and it was a propagandized metamorphosis to gain some element of acceptance. But then again, you had the Ku Klux Klan, and the Ku Klux Klan back in the 20s and 30s was an arm of the Democrat Party. I mean, this, you can't get away from this kind of stuff. And if you want to see a great film by Dinesh D'Souza, his latest one called The Death of a Nation goes through this whole thing, and it's brilliant again, as his other ones are.
And deeply footnoted.
So, pardon me?
And deeply footnoted. So for all those people who would say, absolutely, he's making it up, he's got all his sources.
It's all there. All you got to do is have an open mind and do a little of your own research. Don't believe everything you see on Wikipedia, but I'm going to give you some of this source information here so that you can go directly to it. Now we get to Franklin Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt, as a lot of people were in the 30s, including my father, 1934, my father was a senior at Columbia University in New York. And it took the FBI, when I was in the Navy, to discover that he was one of the leading leaders of the Young Socialists at Columbia University. He was also the co-editor of the Columbia newspaper, The Pelican, with Herman Woke. Now, if you remember, Herman Woke wrote the Kane Mutiny, The Winds of War, stuff like that. And Woke was so upset with the United States and capitalism that Mr. Woke decided that he was going to go down and relocate in the Virgin Islands. And my parents used to go down there and visit him all the time. He is now, 104, I think, living in Palm Desert.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's still around. Okay, so we get to Franklin Roosevelt. Now, Franklin Roosevelt's an interesting character because Eleanor Roosevelt flirted, I would say, and accepted a lot of the communist people who had come over here after the 1917 revolution in Russia. And she had a tremendous influence on Franklin. And what's really interesting about this, back to source material, is that my great uncle Elisha Friedman happened to be the Undersecretary of the Treasury starting in 1933 when Roosevelt took office under Robert Morgenthau, who was actually the Secretary of the Treasury. To my great-uncle's credit, when the New Deal went through, he went to Roosevelt and said, you know, you're going to turn America into a socialist communist country, and I'm going to resign, which he did. So bless his heart.
Huh.
But what's interesting, in 1932, my great uncle was on Wall Street, and he was an investment banker with Kuhn Loeb at 14 Wall Street. And he was sent over to Russia to assess the possibility of doing business in Russia. Russia was absolutely decimated by the Depression that had recently started, as were a lot of other countries, including the United States. And in 1932, when my great uncle returned to the United States, he wrote a book. The book is called Russia in Transition. And what's interesting is that the subtitle is A Businessman's Appraisal. So he went over there, and like Alexis de Tocqueville in 1836, who came to America to observe what we were doing from France, Elisha was over there, talked to people, was given actually open access to everything over there and everybody because they needed capital. It's that simple. Roosevelt and Morgenthau tapped my great uncle to come into the Treasury Department as a result of his trip there and the book that he wrote. And what's interesting is that you can buy this book in paperback still from 1932 on Amazon, and it's used in a number of business schools as a textbook. So that is a piece of source material if you want to learn pretty much about how communism actually started and what it means, the fact that communism, in fact, is a religion on its own, why it denies any other a formal religion, because you have to believe in it if they're going to make any headway. Okay, so during World War II, and if World War II had not started, Roosevelt's New Deal would have kept the Depression going in the United States for at least another 5 to 10 years. That's how bad the New Deal was. Roosevelt brought in a number, this is back in the 30s again, where lots of people, including Lucille Ball, by the way.
Yeah, that was sad. I didn't want Lucille Ball to be a commie.
She joined the Communist Party. Okay, there were lots of people that had joined the Communist Party, and they thought, wow, what Russia is trying to do during the Depression is really terrific. Okay, so they thought that we should be emulating what's going on over there with a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. As a result of that, Roosevelt brought a number of people into his administration, including his two closest advisors, one of which was Harry Dexter White and the other was Harry Hopkins. They were both communist agents, and they were in there for quite some time. Our military during World War II was very, very close to the Russian military, as you recall. FDR became very friendly with Stalin because he realized that we could sell the Russians a ton of stuff and get us out of the Depression. This is what occurred. And again, just you got to read my great uncle's book, and there's a myriad of information on that. And FDR, in spite of the World War II movies and documentaries that you see, FDR thought Stalin was terrific and hated Winston Churchill.
Wow.
Now, the evidence of that is the Yalta Conference in February of 1945 in the Crimea, which was hosted by Stalin. And you can Google this and you'll see pictures of Roosevelt sitting in the middle a month before he died at Yalta with Stalin on the left, Churchill on his right, and all of the pictures show Churchill sulking with Roosevelt and Stalin talking to each other with big smiles on their face. At Yalta, Roosevelt ceded to Stalin Eastern Europe. Now, the only reason that Stalin did not get Greece behind the Iron Curtain was because Churchill insisted that he couldn't have Greece because Churchill loved to vacation in Greece.
And so it's always nice when you learn the backstory that there's at least something important behind the decision. We have to take a really quick break here. Just 1 second, Peter. We'll be right back.
Go pay the bills.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Well, we're listening to. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills. It's somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you play.
America, Europe.
Reminiscent of a time when a man wearing a dress was actually funny.
Yeah. And it was meant to be funny. And
it was supposed to be funny. Yeah. You could get yourself out of the army by wearing a dress. So for everyone who doesn't know what that joke's about, go back and look at reruns of MASH. And the character would have been Klinger.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
I don't think they play those reruns anymore because they're in poor taste.
Oh, yeah, because he carried a handbag and he had gloves and the whole shot.
Yeah.
All right, Peter.
Okay, so moving right along. Okay, Roosevelt's administration, as a result of World War II and his connection and relationship with Joseph Stalin, brought tons of card-carrying communists into his administration, into the army, into the military-industrial complex. There were Russian spies that were in all of the major aircraft manufacturing companies. If you'll recall, back in 1953, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who were part of a communist cell out of New York that gave all of the atomic bomb secrets to the Russians, they were ultimately electrocuted. They were tried, found guilty, and they were electrocuted as a result, executed. So this stuff, it's all well documented, but people don't want to look at it. They just don't want to look at it. And now what's really coming out here is when you've got guys like Gillum down there in Florida.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Didn't get elected. You've got this crazy 28-year-old Ocasio-Cortez. Bernie Sanders, what was really funny during the campaign early on, Bernie Sanders came out and said he was very proud of the fact that he was a diehard democratic socialist. And I'm going, wait a minute. And then you start to research Bernie Sanders, you realize that he married his wife, who is about as corrupt and big a fraud as you can get with her phony university and everything. And when he married her, they vacationed on their honeymoon in Moscow. And you're going, you know, now wait a minute. Hold on. Let's take a look at this. Now, what's fascinating about Bernie Sanders and this Democratic Socialist of America, the DSA, is that I put a lecture together on this, 10, 15 years ago. And I tried to bring this to the attention of people, including the fact that on their website, DSAUSA.org, they actually had published their member list of people in our government, in our Congress, who were members of the DSA. And I see where you put that up on the website. So when you take a look at that, and it was immediately taken off. It was immediately scrubbed off of there. But when you take a look at the listing, and thank goodness you put it up on the website because they don't publicize it anymore, you will recognize members of Congress, all Democrats, not a single Republican, because they believe in redistribution of the wealth.
And some are actually out of office, I should point out. So it's not the today current list, but some of those people, like George Miller from the Bay Area, he was in Congress for an eon. And, yeah, Democratic Socialist. Had somebody voted for him, and I said, do you realize he's a Democratic Socialist? Oh, no, he isn't.
Yeah, he is.
Sure he is.
And then you take Xavier Becerra. If you take a look at him, he was in the assembly from California District 31. He's now our Attorney General.
Yeah, doesn't that make you feel better?
Yeah, Becerra's in there. Diane Watson, Lynn Woolsey. I highlighted Barbara Lee. Barbara Lee, who is a card-carrying, by admission, communist, member of the Communist Party USA from Oakland. She learned from Ron Dellums. She was Ron Dellums' secretary for a while. Mike Honda, who else? Linda Sanchez. Maxine Waters. Crazy, mad Maxine Waters. She has been a member of the DSA now for something like 25 years. Henry Waxman down there in L.A. You know, there's something in the water down there. Got to be. Okay, so when you finally figure out who the DSA is, okay, they're part of the International Socialist International. The Socialist International organization originally started out in Moscow, got tossed out of Moscow because they wanted to be communist and not socialist, and the international or the Socialist International headquarters is now in London, okay, very close to the London School of Economics, believe it or not. All right, so the DSA essentially has got this whole propaganda front here, but their main emphasis is economic distribution. So when you listen to somebody like Ocasio-Cortez and they start propagandizing about free education, free medical care, let's redistribute the wealth, social justice, and all the rest of this garbage, understand who they are, who they really are. They put power over patriotism. It's that simple. And this is today's Democrat Party, period. Now, you can also find, just like George McGovern, back in 1976, you can find Jimmy Carter, who never met a terrorist he didn't like. you can find him palling around also in Havana with Fidel Castro. These people are who they are, and thank God today they're coming out of the closet.
Well, it's interesting that they are coming out of the closet now, and it's accepted. Before it wasn't really accepted. They kept it kind of quiet, and now it's almost like a badge of honor. I don't understand how that shift happened.
Well, I'm going to tell you. Okay, couple of good source books. One is called The Red Network, and it's a book by Elizabeth Dilling. Written in 1932. You can't, I think it may still be in paperback, but otherwise you can go to ABE Books, AmericanBookExchange.com. You can pick this thing up for $3 and you start reading this, and she details the organizations that are members of the Communist Party. She's got a whole chapter on people, a lot of whom you'll know. And then going back to Roosevelt in 1936, after Roosevelt had been in there for 3 years, she wrote the book called The Roosevelt Red Record and its background. Again, Elizabeth Dilling, and she's got stuff in there that you will not believe. I mean, just when you start looking at some of this stuff, and I'll talk about it in a minute, and then in 2012... The guy who was in charge of the House Un-American Activities Committee back in the 50s, a guy named Herbert Romerstein, wrote Stalin's Secret Agents, The Subversion of Roosevelt's Government. You got to read that. This is the source material.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you keep going, you know, you finally arrive at Joe McCarthy. Now, Joe McCarthy's a very interesting guy. He was the senator from Wisconsin. And I stress the fact that Joe McCarthy was a senator. So a couple of nights ago, I'm sitting here and I'm watching Fox News, and some moron on Fox News that they're interviewing from the left makes the statement that Joe McCarthy was responsible for the Hollywood blacklist. Absolutely, factually false. Joe McCarthy was responsible for the Army McCarthy hearings. And when I was 9 years old in 1953, my parents took me and my older sister back to Washington, D.C. We stayed with my uncle, who was a big labor lawyer who was practicing in front of the Supreme Court all the time, and he took me to actually two of the McCarthy hearings.
Okay.
And we sat in for several hours listening to this. The Hollywood blacklist was the result of the House Un-American Activities Committee, HUAC, commonly referred to as HUAC. The head of the Screen Actors Guild during the House Un-American Activities Committee hearings on communists in Hollywood, will you hear what else I have to say about that, was Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was the president of the Screen Actors Guild and was fed up with communists in Hollywood, and so he cooperated with HUAC in order to route these people out, and that's where people got exposed, like Lucille Ball. And if you go, you can see her card, her voter registration card.
Yeah, it's right there on the web.
And she, party affiliation, communist. I mean, there it is, okay? It's a fact. There it is. Okay, so when you take a look at Joe McCarthy, what the left has done for the last two generations is that they have characterized Joe McCarthy as the symbol, okay, of conspiracy theorists, you know, who are after really decent people, on and on and on. And I just couldn't believe this. I sent several emails to Fox News going, you know, at least get people on there that know what the hell they're talking about. Okay, you go to a book by Rammerstein again in 2000 called The Venona Secrets. V as in Victor, E-N-O-N-A. The Venona Secrets were military intercepts of cables during the Roosevelt administration and back into the 50s with the Army that went between Moscow and the NKVD and the communist agents in America that were in our military industries, that were in the government, that were in the Army. And this is what Joe McCarthy was trying to rout out. So the bottom line is Joe McCarthy was right. But you got to read the source material. Okay, so when you go and you take a look, for example, I gave you this list of notable Democrat communists in American history. Understand, and we'll get into immigration, all of this stuff kind of has a nexus to each other. Roger Baldwin in 1924 created the ACLU, okay, the American Civil Liberties Union.
The what? ACLU, are they bad?
Yeah. The ACLU was created.
They were supposed to be good.
Hang on. Roger Baldwin created the ACLU specifically to defend the Bolsheviks who attempted to overthrow the United States government in 1924. It was called the Red Scare. The ACLU finally threw out the noted public communists in about 1964, 1965, and they don't talk about it anymore. But it was originally started as a communist organization.
Gee, I wonder why they don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
Could it be the unpleasantness of the actual truth? We have to take another quick break, but we'll bring back some more unpleasantness in just a couple of minutes. We've got unpleasantness burn.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. My favorite lie, the ACLU is good.
Oh, Peter, Thanksgiving dinner, you know, we all try to steer away from politics because our family's a little bit divided on that topic. And, of course, naturally, it's impossible.
Just part of the problem is some of them are younger, but they're really not lefties. They're not lefties,
but they're, you know, they're the millennials. And unfortunately, some of them are your typical, you know, 20-somethings that don't have much work experience. Don't understand why they're not getting rich right out of college. Don't think it's fair that they had to get a student loan to get an education that they can't really use. And, of course, it's everybody else's fault. And, you know, our history is all wrong. We need to rewrite it. And that's where I lost it. It's like, it's okay to tear down statues and rewrite things because they were bad people. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Okay. I've got something that will blow your mind. Uh-oh. Since you brought up the propaganda in the school system, public school system, one of the worst offenders is Howard Zinn, Z-I-N-N. Howard Zinn years ago, and thank goodness he's expired.
I like that.
Yeah, he's expired. Zinn wrote originally a book called A People's History of the United States. And at least 50-60% of that book is just BS. It's all made up. The guy was wrong. He hated the United States. And you can get that on ABE Books, or you can buy the updated Through the 20th Century, and he added two chapters called The 20th Century. You get that in paperback. But this guy has screwed up public education historically like you wouldn't imagine. You'll start reading some of this stuff that this guy wrote that they use as textbooks in college courses on American history, 1877 to the present, and it's disgraceful. It is outrageous. And then you wonder why these kids come out of school and they're complete morons.
Yeah. It's shocking the level of misinformation they base their facts on. I shake my head. These kids just got out of school and this is what they believe. I mean, it's whatever their plan was, it worked.
Well, and this has gone. You go back several years, and you go back to at least Marx's Communist Manifesto, 1848. Not only do you have to have a national banking system to control the monetary supply, you also have to control public education.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just read, for God's sake, the Communist Manifesto, and you go to about page 40 when the actual tenets of the Communist Party are listed there, and then go to the DNC.org website and take a look at what their platform is. 8 of the 10 tenets in Marx are sitting right there on the DNC platform.
Right. Well, so if you talk to these kids and listen to what they perceive as real, it's totally understandable why these socialists are being elected to office.
Well, people, they're not afraid of socialism anymore. They've made it, it's sort of like murder. You know, you have a million TV shows about it. You got video games. You have all that. It's like murder. Well, you know, it's murder.
Yeah, it's,
We've normalized it.
It's progressivism. They constantly change the name, as you go along in history when they get found out.
Right.
You know, and we're back to progressives now. It used to be liberals. Well, liberals turned out to be bad. So, let's call it progressive because it sounds like we're moving forward. And then let's not call it socialism. Let's call it democratic socialism. Oh, that's good for everybody.
Yeah, we can relate to that.
You know, and they think, these idiot kids think that socialism has something to do with social media. Oh, I believe in social media. No. We're talking about socialism.
Uh-huh.
great book, published a little paperback book published in 1962 called Capitalism, Communism, and Socialism, Comparative Economic Systems. It was published as a textbook in 1962, and the advisory board consultants, believe it or not, this will fascinate you, is C.C. Trillingham, superintendent of schools, L.A. County, James Calderwood, the School of Business Administration, the University of Southern California, USC, University of Spoiled Children. And there it is. They don't use this anymore. They compare, it's just paperback. It's about 60 pages. They compare these three economic resources here. But going back, I mean, we've had two justices on the Supreme Court back there in the 50s, you know, who were members of the Communist Party USA. Albert Einstein, of all people, was a member of the Communist Party. An interesting thing, going back to Roosevelt, in 1933, Roosevelt put William C. Bullitt, B-U-L-L-I-T-T, who was one of Roosevelt's chief advisors, as the ambassador to the Soviets. Now, from 1917 until 1933, there was absolutely no recognition of the Bolshevik communist government in Russia. It was William Bullitt who advised Franklin Roosevelt to recognize the administration of Joseph Stalin. Now, when you take these dots and you begin to connect these dots, it leads you to an unequivocal conclusion. So when you add in the other dots with Joe McCarthy and the communists that were in Roosevelt's administration and everything that was going on there back in the 30s and 40s, excuse me, all of a sudden this stuff makes sense. Bullitt is a very interesting character. Bullitt married the widow of a guy named John Reed. Did you ever see the movie called Reds?
Kind of a long time ago, though.
A long time ago, and it was Warren Beatty who played John Reed, and Diane Keaton who played his wife. You got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, John Reed, back in the 30s, was an arch-communist, traveled back and forth between the United States and Moscow, trying to spread communists in the United States and fomenting the Communist Party USA. He died in Moscow. He's buried in the Kremlin as a hero of the Soviet Union. William Bullitt, who Roosevelt appointed ambassador to Stalin, married John Reed's widow. You beginning to connect dots?
Yeah.
God, this is... Like,
talk about social circles.
The tangled web.
Well, let me fast forward now. When Obama was in office, Obama had a national security advisor who was a complete idiot with no resume named Benjamin Rhodes. Remember Ben Rhodes?
Oh, God. You know, and you could tell he really didn't know what he was talking about, but tried to be a big deal. How'd he get in there?
Rhodes' older brother is David Rhodes, the president of CBS.
Ooh.
You know, you got to research this stuff.
Well, there's his qualifications right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where did Chelsea Clinton get her job that paid her $600,000 a year?
CBS.
CBS.
Ding 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 ding. Good job, Bill.
Yeah. Ding 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 ding. Start to connect the dots.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, so, we've got to take a news break. Sorry, we...
let's pick this up, because this is following the
trail. Yeah,
get a
notebook. Second half will be interesting. You're listening to We the People. Our guest is Peter Friedman. We'll be right back. You're tuned in on wethepeopleradio.us. And welcome back to We the People Radio, second hour. And if you didn't know, Lucille Ball was a commie, you missed the first hour. Mm. That should have been our quiz question. Did you know Lucille Ball was a commie?
See, I would have thought Ricky was a commie, but I didn't think Lucy would be.
That's right. Ricky was from Cuba. What about that? I don't know about Ricky. But Lucy's card is on the website.
All I got now is she's got some splaining to do.
Nice.
Yeah.
So if you go to wethepeopleradio.us and you look up the show on November the 25th of 2018, just in case we've replayed this at a different time, you will find Lucy's commie card. Not good.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Peter Friedman. And our sponsor this hour
is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer up on Twin View Boulevard, just south of Phil's Propeller. And they're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. And they do everything tractors, from small tractors to big tractors, parts sales service. They do it all up there. They're friendly folks. Go up and see them. And you can call them Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. They're closed on Saturday now until spring. But their number is 226-9226, or you can reach them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Ta-da.
That's Team Power.
Tractors that are green, tractors that are orange.
Yep. Best you can buy.
There you go. Okay. So without further ado, back to our guest, Peter Friedman. And the answer to everything, by the way, is do your research and read the book.
Read the book.
You got it.
Read the book.
That's always the thing. Do the research, read the book. So you're a firearms instructor, you're a pilot. You've been a pilot for, like, what, 50 years or something? What was your 50-year-old?
Well, I've been in aviation business for 52 years, and I've been a flight instructor since 1977.
Nice.
Amongst other things.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. And
anyway.
Okay, so launching back in. It was like,
okay, launching back
like we were never going.
Here's an answer to a Jeopardy question.
Ooh.
In Hillary Clinton's third year in law school at Yale, she came out here to Berkeley and clerked for the head of the California Communist Party, a woman named Doris Walker.
Really?
And Robert Truhaft. Oh, yeah. Yeah, just look it up. Okay?
Right in the face.
It's right there. It's on Google. And she was given an opportunity while she clerked that summer for these people in Berkeley to be part of the defense team for the Black Panthers and Bobby Seale.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize she clerked for the Communist Party. That's pretty amazing.
Yep, Doris Walker. Look it up. It's right there. I mean, just, you know, Doris Walker and Robert Truhaft. Anyway, let me tell you how stupid Democrats are, especially in South Carolina. You remember the baloney with Nikki Haley when she was governor about the Confederate Stars and Bars flag flying over the Capitol?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and the Stars and Bars was the state flag of South Carolina.
Right.
And all the little millennials were protesting and you know, breaking things and everything. We've got to get rid of that because it's racist and on and on and on. You know what the state flag of South Carolina is today? They replaced the Stars and Bars. Do you know what the state flag is today?
No.
Got to look it up. It's the Palmetto flag. The state, you know, of South Carolina is called the Palmetto State, after the palmetto tree.
Okay.
The only place where it grows in the United States. So the state flag of South Carolina, the Stars and Bars, was replaced by this palmetto flag, which is a white palmetto tree sitting on a field of blue with a crescent moon under it.
Whoa.
Now, what's interesting, if you really do the research, this exact flag was adopted as the state flag of the Confederacy in 1861 in January.
Classic.
Keep it down, Peter. They're going to throw that one out next.
But did some millennial think they designed it?
Who knows? They thought, I guess, well, we're the Palmetto State, so our state flag should have a palmetto tree on it. So the state flag, the identical flag that was adopted by the Confederacy and that flew over Fort Sumter, our national anthem, right? Oh, say, can you see?
Uh-huh.
And here is Francis Scott Key watching the Confederates bombing Fort Sumter. And when the Confederates finally occupied Fort Sumter, they raised the Confederate flag over Fort Sumter, and it was the flag with the palmetto tree on it. And that is the flag that these idiots, without any knowledge of history, have now adopted as the state flag of South Carolina.
Wow. I actually just kind of feel sorry for them at this point. That's just sad.
It's hysterical. It's hysterical. I mean, this is public education, I guess.
I'm sure that the older people in South Carolina just were incredulous.
Oh, I'm sure, you know, the
Stars and Bars were,
and everything are just laughing.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, guys, go ahead.
It's okay.
Take that flag.
Huge improvement.
So let me explain why the media hates Donald Trump.
Oh, wow.
It's very simple. It is very simple, as are most things in life if you break them up. Okay, so what you have here is a media, Democrat Party, and academia nexus, okay? They're all together. This all started with the media during Watergate in 1972 with Richard Nixon. Because up until that time, the media reported on political campaigns. They didn't influence or control a political campaign. With Nixon and Watergate, and you're probably not old enough to remember that, but with Nixon and Watergate back between 72 and when he resigned in August of 74, it was the media and this idiot Carl Bernstein, who would have been long gone had he not been with the Washington Post. He didn't do any research. Deep Throat gave him all the information. Deep Throat today would have contacted Fox News. But back then, there was no Fox News. There was no talk radio or anything. So he contacted the Washington Post, which was reasonably, you know, a middle-of-the-road media at the time. So Bernstein, ever since then, has just proceeded, you know, along in his life based on what he did with Watergate, and which was really nothing. He was just the receiver of the information, and they published it. From 1972 on, the media became like in England back in the Wars of the Roses with the Lancasters and the Yorks, the Earl of Warwick. And the Earl of Warwick was known in history in England as the Kingmaker, because people went to the Earl of Warwick and said, who do you think ought to be the king? Should we go with the Yorks or the Lancasters? And that's how he became the Kingmaker. This is what happened with the media after Watergate. The media all of a sudden discovered the power that they had in order to influence political elections. And it has been this way ever since for the last 44 years? And if you think about that, the reason that the media gave Trump all of the airtime, Trump doesn't have enough money to buy the airtime he got during the campaign. They gave him all of that airtime because it was a pay-per-view event between him and Hillary. And all it did was raise the ratings of the media. People wanted to just, let's tune in and watch this cat fight. And then the media said there is no way, because Hannity, you know, puts this on all the time. He does this montage of everybody on CNN and MSLSD saying, oh, well, Trump, it's a joke. He's never going to get elected. Ah, so we can go ahead and we can make fun of him and everything. And they were stunned in November in 2016.
To say it lightly, they were stunned.
And I do love those montages that they play periodically of them.
And all of a sudden, Trump now has caused the media to lose their control over politics. That's why they hate him.
Well, if they would have, you know, gone after him and then he would have been quiet, would have been game over, they would have owned him, but he refuses to acknowledge and care about what they say, and everybody knows that's the most powerful thing. If you ignore it, you take away all the power.
He figured them out early and pretty much controlled what they reported. Yeah.
It's been kind of interesting. So believe it or not, we have to celebrate capitalism again really quickly, and then we'll be right back.
Wait to see what happens here, especially with, you know, Tewsom Newsom taking over as governor.
We were just talking
about
that.
We were talking about him on the break. When we come back, we want thoughts on good old Gavin. We will be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. day coming when I won't be able to use this song anymore.
Yeah. Play your cards right, though. You can get buried in the Kremlin.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, they do have a program for that.
Bad news bears. All right, Peter. Back to you.
Okay. I want to get into the immigration thing because I want to explain to everybody the caravans. Because everybody thinks that, okay, this is spontaneous and these people are the gang. It's all nonsense. Let me explain this. Okay. The Democrats believe in changing demographics for political control. Look what's happened in California. Our votes are worthless. Okay, people in California are so indoctrinated and ignorant that they turned down Proposition 6, which would have eliminated Jerry Brown's increase in the gas tax. They didn't read the proposition. The proposition did not say that the increase in the gas tax was going to go to repair roads and stuff, but it said specifically in that proposition that it would be money that would be deposited into the general fund. So you got some guy like Gavin Newsom who's coming out here and saying, well, you know, we're going to have single-payer insurance in California for medical care. And by the way, we are going to cover illegal aliens. So let me connect some dots here for you. Immigration. Everybody's going nuts now because Trump has rightfully threatened to shut the border. Well, he wouldn't be the first president who's ever done that. There's never been a Democrat president who's done it, but it's been done by Ronald Reagan. It was done by George Bush Sr., and it was hopefully going to be done by Donald Trump. Based on the Red Scare of 1924, and please Google the Red Scare. This is when the Bolsheviks from Russia who escaped Stalin came here, tried to overthrow our government and create a communist government. Based on that, from 1924 until 1964, we had almost no immigration into this country at all. Period. Borders were closed. Only certain people were allowed to come in. This is a fact. It's like gravity. Look it up. Okay, so what happened in 1964? Well, let's think about that for a minute. Gee whiz, November of 63, as I recall, Jack Kennedy was assassinated. 1964, Lyndon Johnson takes over, and there were two senators, pardon me, who came to Johnson, Democrats, of course, and said, you know, we've got a heck of an idea here. We are going to have to bring refugees in here so that they have a pathway to citizenship. Now, this is very important. Somebody who is a recognized refugee into the United States or who is granted legal asylum is given a green card, they're given cash, they're given a pathway to citizenship after 4 years. If you come over illegally, you have no pathway to citizenship. So it doesn't benefit the Democrat Party to bring illegals in here. They have got to find a way to bring people in here legally under the refugee program or as asylees. So what happened in 1964? Nobody came in here to augment the voter rolls for the Democrat Party from 1924 until 1964. In 1964, you sitting down?
Yes.
Ted Kennedy, who has expired, and Joe Biden.
Uncle Joe.
Kennedy and Biden, and I cannot believe nobody throws this in Joe Biden's face, you know, if he tries to run for president at 82 or 85 or whatever the heck he is now, throws this up to Joe Biden, the fact that in 1964 he convinced Lyndon Johnson to amend Eisenhower's 1952 Refugee Act to allow Vietnamese refugees to come into the United States. Now, the majority of the Vietnamese refugees who ultimately came here, they all as a bloc vote Democrat. If you recall, John Kennedy did not want to escalate in Vietnam. John Kennedy wanted to get out of Vietnam. Now, I'm not going to go to the grassy knoll at this point, but Kennedy very specifically did not want to get involved in Vietnam, especially with the fiasco with the Bay of Pigs in Cuba. Well, you've also got to remember that Lyndon Johnson was from Texas. He was also Speaker of the House at one point. And in Texas, you had the majority of all of the military industries, LTV, Bell Helicopter, all these companies that were producing military hardware that were used in Vietnam. I know, I was there, 1964. I was in the Navy. So, interestingly enough, Johnson goes and puts the bill through Congress because it was a Democrat Congress, and they pass the bill, he signs it, and now all of a sudden we get involved heavily in the Vietnamese conflict. We start bringing Vietnamese refugees over here. Not only them, but Cambodians, okay, people from Laos. All of a sudden, they start under Johnson infiltrating here until 1968, of course, when Nixon won in a landslide because we wanted to stop the war. So if you recall back then, if you do the research, and again, you're probably not old enough to remember, but in 1968, you had people, as far as the millennials were concerned, on both sides, Republican and Democrat, who were against the war. They had a common target. And today, we don't have that common target. And so that's why you have this gang war between the Republican base and the Democrat base. There is no common target. Okay? So now you're talking about the refugees, right? Again, you've got to remember that a refugee or an asylee has a direct pathway to citizenship. Illegal aliens don't. Okay, so now, based on that, you have to understand what has happened with refugees to understand this current caravan since 1964. So the first thing we did was we brought in the Vietnamese. Under Clinton, we brought in the Somalis. Okay, you can't hire a cab at Minneapolis Airport that doesn't have a Somali driving it, because there are 900 cabs at Minneapolis Airport, and the entire franchise goes to the Somali refugees. It's also the children of those Somali refugees that shot up the Westgate Mall in Bombay, India, a few years ago, if you recall. And out of the nine, I think, terrorists that shot it up, seven of them were the children, the sons of Somali refugees that were brought in here by Bill Clinton after Mogadishu and settled in Minnesota. So when you start looking at that, and then all of a sudden, gee whiz, that makes Keith Ellison sound, familiar. I wonder if there's a nexus there as the first Muslim ever elected to Congress. And then the two Muslim women in Minnesota who were just elected to Congress, who campaigned throughout the midterm elections without wearing a hijab. And when they took the picture of all of the freshman Congress critters 2 weeks ago on the Capitol steps, here are these two women in hijabs now.
Oh, and let's not forget how much they liked Israel before they got elected.
They have also put a bill together in Congress now to allow religious garb to be worn in Congress.
Which has always been a no-no.
Because we had a hat rule. There was a hat rule in Congress. Right. Couldn't wear hats. Could you imagine if what's-her-face out of Texas, the other Maxine Waters with the hats?
Oh, Sheila Jackson. Oh, no, Frederica Wilson.
Yeah,
out of
I was going to say Frederica, but that sounds funny.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And that crazy woman that looks like something out of Wizard of Oz from Connecticut.
Yeah, Laura.
With the colored hair.
Yeah, her parents were peacocks, or one of them was.
Good God. Yeah. Okay, so let me stay on this migration thing.
We're gonna get an award for kindness. You know that, don't you?
Oh, I hope so.
Not.
So what happens with this caravan now, if you think about it, a year ago, Trump said, we're shutting off Muslim immigration, no more Syrian Muslims and stuff, from these seven countries. So the Democrats panicked. And they went, my God, okay, if we're going to salt the demographics, we've got to find a way to bring more refugees in here and more people seeking asylum. Because Trump now won in the Supreme Court, okay, after a couple of these Yahoo Ninth Circus Court of Appeals people, judges, said, no, you can't do that. Yes, you can do that. He's the president. It's right there in Article 3 of the Constitution. And so the Supreme Court upheld his ability by statute to stop immigration from these countries. No more Muslim refugees now came in. So the Democrats had to find a way to get more refugees in here. And this is what this caravan is involved with. These are people who are coming up here, not from Mexico. They are called OTMs by the Border Patrol. It's other than Mexican, because the Mexicans by themselves can't come in here and claim refugee status. They can't claim asylum because they're not persecuted in Mexico. So the Democrats carved out this loophole that said, okay, anybody else, though, it's not from Mexico and it's not a Mexican national, they can come in here and they can be granted asylum. And guess what? We're going to give them a path to citizenship and they'll always vote Democrat.
And the great part is right now, as we speak, actually, they are looking at shutting down the border because a whole bunch of them, and again, this is Sunday, November 25th, 2018, in case this is airing at a different time, you know, don't panic. But the caravan actually tried to push past the border at the San Ysidro port of entry. And imagine that. They were mostly men. They rushed the border and mostly dispersed, but they've closed a lot of the car traffic. And one of the news things said they have closed the border, although I couldn't verify that in another source. So we have to take a quick break.
All you have to do is get in, and then they can get a notice to appear.
That's right, and it'll be magical for them.
Yeah.
Oh, great, and magical for us as well. But most magical, and Merry Christmas for the Democratic Party. Terrific. We'll be right back with our guest, Peter Friedman.
Sarcasm. Go get a job. That's pretty harsh talk there, though.
Get a haircut and get a job.
Yeah.
If you want to switch songs, you gotta stick with songs.
Get a real job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. It's like we were never gone.
Yeah. So we're back. We're back to the border.
And okay. Am I on?
Yes, you are, sir.
Okay. Let me explain.
You're always on.
Modus operandi here for the caravan. It's called Cloward and Piven. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Oh, yeah. Overload the system.
Overload the system. Richard Cloward, who fortunately has expired, and Francis Fox Piven back in 1966, both communist professors at Columbia. Francis is still alive and still teaching at 85, 86 years old at Columbia, you know, indoctrinating stupid millennials. And they came up with this method by which they could affect change for the poor. And that was to overload the system. And this is what the caravans are trying to do. So if you understand the doctrine of Cloward and Piven and you read their whole doctrine and you take a look at what's going on down there at the border, you pretty much can connect the dots and discover who's behind this caravan baloney. All right, so immigration. Let's talk a little bit about who's funding this. During the Obama administration, okay, the majority of refugees that were brought into the United States were placed in six states. You might recognize them. 10% went to Texas, 9% to California, 6% to Michigan, 5%, almost 6% to New York, 5% to Florida, because they're obviously trying to turn Florida blue, and 4.5% to Arizona. So the whole idea was to salt the demographics with potential Democrat voters, and you saw what happened with Martha McSally and that idiot cinema down there in Arizona. And that's what's going on, and this is what they are doing. This is what they're doing. And our State Department foments this. They implement this because they provide the funding to nine contractors that are exclusive to the State Department, and I'm going to read you off the names of these contractors and how much money, tax money, we give them in order to run this refugee program and place these refugees where they get placed. It runs into the billions, and it's funded by the Department of Homeland Security as far as processing them. Homeland Security provides the green cards, provides the cash payments, which is about $3,000 for the first 6 months, and then the federal government turns them over to the local government. Department of State processes the admissions, and the Department of Health and Human Services, Office of Refugee Resettlement, funds this almost $1 billion today by itself. Okay? Health and Human Services. Okay, so here are the nine contractors exclusive. The first one is the Church World Service. Now, you can go to irs.gov. And you can pull up their 990 tax forms. They're right there, so this information comes right from the Internal Revenue Service. We gave them taxpayer money, $76 million. Okay? Ethiopian Community Development Council, we gave them only $15 million. This is our tax money funded to these nine contractors through the State Department to resettle refugees. The Episcopal Migration Ministries, we gave them $17 million. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, they got $25 million. All right, you remember the synagogue that got shot up?
Yeah.
Okay, in Pittsburgh. They were part of this funding that came to do this. That's why I guess this guy was so upset. The International Rescue Committee, got to sit down for this one. $456 million. That came right off the 994.
Who are they rescuing?
Yeah, really. The United States Conference, get this, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, $39 million. This information is 3 years old. It's got to be a lot more today. The Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services, they got $43 million. The World Relief Corporation got $56 million. This is 3 years old. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, they resettled the largest number of refugees in the United States in the last 10 years, $70 million.
God, they're slipping. They should have got more than that.
Okay. In California, the four preferred cities for refugee resettlement have been Sacramento, San Diego, Modesto, and would you believe Walnut Creek, where I am? There is a resettlement There is a resettlement office in Walnut Creek that is right outside of Rossmore.
The big retirement community?
Yeah, in Walnut Creek. And if you go down there and you try and have a chat with them, they don't have to give you any information whatsoever because under Obama, they passed a Privacy Act. They do not have to tell you anything. They don't have to tell you how many Syrian refugees they have placed in Walnut Creek or how much money they get or anything.
Now they're based in Walnut. They're based in Walnut Creek, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're settling people in Walnut Creek because that's kind of a high bucks district, isn't it?
Well, it essentially is, but they tried to build a huge mega mosque here in Walnut Creek as well.
How'd that work out?
Got turned down.
What happened to all that tolerance?
Got turned down. Yeah, they decided
we want that tolerance as long as it's over where you are.
But do you understand what's going on with the caravans now?
Oh, sure.
Because Trump shut off refugees from the Middle East, and the Democrats for 2020, they need to bring in more people who have a pathway to citizenship. And in 1996. When Clinton and Gore ran for re-election, Clinton personally promoted a project prior to his re-election to enfranchise and create citizens out of 330,000 refugees that he had brought in from various parts of the world, including Somalia. And they kept it real quiet. But if you do the research, you can find it.
Well,
and this is what's going on.
Well, they're posting. They're currently posting videos of migrants that are at this very moment pushing toward the border fence, chanting "Yes, we can." And on the other side are the Marines and the Air and Marine agents. So I don't know what that means. I was thinking Air Force and Marine Corps, but maybe that's not what that means.
Well, what we need at the border is we need a DMZ, a demilitarized zone, of about 100 yards between us and Mexico.
Yeah.
And you better not get caught in the middle.
Yeah, because right now it's a big game. They've all got big smiles on their faces, and they're running through the water, and we're running up to the fence, and it's all just, you know.
And waving Honduran flags, waving other countries' flags. That's called a military invasion.
Yeah. Well, and 90% of them, the article says, 90% of them are men. So the whole women and children thing kind of, some reporter found a picture of a woman and a child. But
yeah, but when you watch the news, I guarantee you most of the shots will have women and children in them.
Of course they do.
And that's what they want you to believe. Yeah.
And the media is controlled, together with the Democrats. I wanted to tell you something funny about Hollywood. Just talking to somebody who was in the film business a couple of days ago who is a conservative, and I will not mention the name. And I was saying this is very interesting about Hollywood because Hollywood did not invent the film business. The film business in Hollywood was started by Russians who escaped Stalin in 1917 after the Russian Revolution, and they all came from the Russian Film Institute. Now, I used to live next door to a guy named Ben Fish when I grew up in Beverly Hills. Ben Fish's brother was a guy named Sam Fish, but that's not their name. When the two brothers escaped from Russia after the revolution, their name was Samuel and Benjamin Goldfish.
I was close. I picked Birch.
Sam Goldwyn.
Oh.
So Sam Goldwyn, Sam changed his name from Goldfish to Goldwyn, and his brother Ben decided to leave off the gold and call himself Ben Fish.
Huh.
So the people who started Hollywood, which is another piece of propaganda that's incredible, were people who escaped Russia in 1917, 1918, from the Russian Film Institute. because I was an apprentice photographer when I was 13 years old to a guy named Dr. Alexander Arkhatov, who was one of the heads of the Russian Film Institute and wound up becoming a member of our temple in Beverly Hills. Got the whole story right from there.
You've seriously been there and done that. I mean, that that's the only thing that describes it. We have to take a really quick break, and I found a couple songs for you in honor of your firearms history there, and firearms everywhere that are probably going to now be all illegal in California. Might as well sing about them.
Talking about his brand new mission, liked his plans, but they came undone when it got around to God and guns. I don't know how he grew up, but it sure wasn't down at the hunting club. Cause if it was, he'd understand just a little bit more about the working man. God and guns keep us strong.
Immigration scene, shining and feeling clean. Could it be a sin? I got stopped by the immigration man. He said he doesn't know if he can. Let me in, let me in. Immigration man, can I cross the line and pray I can stay another day? Immigration man, I won't tow your line today. I can't see it anyway.
There's no line. Just come on in. Can't see the line.
Yep, just grab a child. Actually, yeah. that's your ticket in. All right, Peter, we've got like 10 minutes. What do we want to try to cram in the last 10?
Gun control's fun.
Yeah, why not?
You know, we you put it up on the website, which is really, it's amazing. And all it proves with what, you know, you put on the website is that Democrats shouldn't be allowed to own firearms. You know, like if you start with Abe Lincoln, he was shot by a Democrat. James
Garfield. Yeah, it's a nice list you've got there.
Yeah, he was shot by a Democrat. Gerald Ford was fired at by, you know, what was it, Mousy or whatever her name was. She tried to kill Gerald Ford in 75.
Squeaky.
83, you know, the guy Hinckley shot Ronald Reagan. He was a registered Democrat. 84, James Hubert, a Democrat, shot and killed 22 people in a McDonald's restaurant. 86, Patrick Sherrill shot and killed 15 people in Oklahoma post office. 1990. James Poe, a Democrat, registered, shot and killed 10 people at a General Motors office. You know, you just keep going. I mean, there's that whole list that you put up there that I gave to you. You know, and you go all the way down to, you know, 2016, you got the crazy guy who shot up the baseball game.
Yeah,
and
Steve Scalise.
Wounded Congressman Steve Scalise. And you take a look at all of these Democrats who have gotten involved with firearm violence, including, you know, Gerald Loeffner, Adam Lanza, the crazy guy in the Colorado theater. I'm sorry, Newtown, Connecticut. James Holmes, he was the guy in the movie theater. Gerald Loeffner in 2010 that shot Representative Gabrielle Giffords. He killed six other people besides taking shots at her. You know, and again, what does it prove to me? Connect the dots. Democrats shouldn't be allowed to own firearms. It's that simple. Find me a conservative or a Republican that has ever done any of these things. You can't find them. Not only that, but since I teach this stuff as a firearm, you know, instructor, the FBI has absolutely no record in their files of anybody in the last two, three generations since they started keeping records with J. Edgar Hoover, of anybody that had a lawful permit to carry concealed committing a crime with a firearm. Period. Nothing. Yeah. Zippo.
You did, however, have the guy in Texas who shot the guy who shot up the church, and he was a Republican, I believe.
The guy who shot the guy.
The guy that came out of his house. He stopped him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And then you had the other guy that walked into the packing plant. I'm trying to remember what it was, in Oklahoma. With an AR-15 and a big butcher knife, and he cut the woman's head off.
Yeah.
And the guy ran outside who used to own the business. He was there under a contract, you know, during this transition of the business. He ran out to his car because the new owners made it a gun-free zone. And he ran out to his car. He was a reserve deputy, grabbed his AR out of the trunk, came back in, and put the guy down before he could cut the other woman's head off. So, you know, and he was a registered Republican and a reserve deputy. So, you know, if you actually look at this kind of stuff, then you basically can understand why the left has always promoted gun confiscation. Whenever an authoritarian regime takes control in any kind of an environment, the first thing they got to get rid of is they got to get rid of everybody's ability to defend themselves, because then they have absolute control. And there's nothing you can do about it. That's why the people in the caravan want to get out of Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala. I mean, nothing here is difficult.
No.
All you've got to do is pay attention and stop believing the propaganda that you're hearing in public schools. These kids are getting degrees in basket weaving and ethnic studies and women's studies and all the rest of this garbage, and then they graduate. And they don't understand why they can't find a job. They can't find a job because they don't have a skill.
Well, and they got tricked into taking out a student loan. Don't forget that.
They got tricked.
Oh, well,
they got
tricked. That's why Obama nationalized the student loan process. Now go back to the Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx, Friedrich Engels, 1848, and it's in there.
Wow. Fairly straightforward.
Access to education.
Yeah,
and then they turn around under Obama, say, "Well, you know, if you do X amount of government service, we'll give you some credit for loans that you owe the government." And these kids are out there. And the minute Obama nationalized the student loan program, except for one bank in Utah, by the way, which is another story for another seminar, all of a sudden, all these universities raised their tuition rates.
Sure, guaranteed.
There you go.
Yep, it's guaranteed. But I just don't understand how anybody with half a brain can take out a loan for anything and then feel like they shouldn't have to pay it back. I mean, that's basic finance 101.
Not only do they not have to pay it back, but what is the guarantee that they will be able to move forward based upon this ridiculous education?
Yeah, nothing.
Where's the guarantee of the college to the student that if you give us $50,000, you will be able to go out and get a job?
Right. And in all fairness, I mean, we have nieces and nephews that, you know, they took out loans, but they got a degree in something that's marketable.
Actually, they didn't take out loans. They didn't take out scholarships.
Well, they spent a lot of money on their education, but I mean,
they were marketable when they went in, so the schools paid them to go there. They were either athletes or scholars.
Right.
So, well, and that's a way to do it.
Yeah, think about the other kids, though. When Obama nationalized the student loan program, and now he turns around and he makes them conditioned to accept largesse from the government. We're gonna forgive part of your loan if you, I should tell you, vote Democrat, okay? Because when you rob Peter to pay Paul, you always get Paul's vote.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna give you this loan, and you get to go to this school, and here's what you have to study. And when you get out, if you continue to do what we want you to do, we will forgive part of this loan, and we won't give you a 1099 for it. It's buying votes.
Yeah. No, exactly.
It's just propaganda and buying votes and creating this continuing basis to keep the people doing it in power. It has nothing to do with America. It's got nothing to do with patriotism whatsoever. These people could care less. Republicans think for themselves.
Yep.
This is why you see people in the Republican Party, you know, guys like John McCain, who's expired, okay, who you know, speak for themselves, and you have the conservative caucus, the Freedom Caucus, and guys like that. Democrats, they will BS you to get elected, and they all vote in lockstep, because if they don't, Nancy Pelosi won't give them any money to get reelected.
Yep, and she's making that very clear right now. So, Peter, thank you very much for coming on.
But we've watched her silence her opposition, so you got to hand her...
she swings a mean club.
Always a pleasure.
For a granny, she's
always a
toughie.
All right.
Love being with you guys, and look forward to the next time.
All right, Peter.
Thanks
thank
a lot, Peter.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate it. You've been listening to We the People. You can find everything you need to know about the show at wethepeopleradio.us.